Hi, welcome to New Realities. My name is Zachary Sutter, covering for Alan Steinfeld this week. And I'd like to welcome a very special guest to the show, a photographer who has had her work shown all over the world, including the Metropolitan Museum of Art, New York, the Whitney, the Venice Biennale. In 2002, her retrospective, Seeing and Believing, was nominated for Best Solo Museum Show of the Year by the International Association of Art Critics. She's the creator of the human race machine and a morphing technology that's been used by the FBI in finding missing children and adults. She has been a photographer for over 30 years and has recently published a book called Lineage about where her work has taken her into a new relationship with beings that calls themselves the extracelestials. Nancy Burson, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I'm very excited.
And in a historical evening as well, this, I believe.
It is. It is. It's
yes,
in a historic time, not only for America, but also for you as well. I really want to start. I mean, you have such an incredible career up until now.
Mm-hmm.
And your work has really moved into a different area. And I'm really fascinated by that edge.
Mm-hmm.
You were, at least for me, an intellectual photographer, someone who was doing high art, someone who would be spoken about in, you know, one of Woody Allen's films. and now, somehow, something has happened, something was brought into your life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, tell us about that transition.
Well, there's so many transitions, but I think that the one that was probably the most meaningful and the most effective, there was a week in Wilshire in the midst of the crop circle season in 2004, and we had been in 2003, and we had actually interacted with the crop circle at that point in time and actually increased the size of the circle. So at that point, it was a certainty that we were going to come back, and of course, what I really wanted more than anything was to meet these beings, these light beings that do, I believe, make the circles. So at that point, I had also asked for a healing from these beings, and so the first night that we arrived, something always happens the first night, and that something is usually pretty big. And that was the first night that we had spent outside of Marlborough in this little country inn. And I went to sleep, and 20 minutes later, I was awakened by this huge sound over my head and lights kind of flashing and the brightest lights and this energy that just ran through me. And I sort of felt like, okay, if you come back tomorrow night, I promise I'll go to the window and look. But right now, I'm frozen stiff because I'm so frightened. And so that was the beginning. And, of course, about a week later, we were in a field, and there were three of us standing there. And I was taking pictures, and there were all of a sudden these two very bright lights that kind of danced in front of us. And I knew that I had taken the pictures, and at that point I just kind of let my camera hang around my neck, and I just felt their love. And there was so much love, it was so extraordinary, that when I came back to New York, I missed them. And I asked them at that point to come and live with me.
That's incredible. And this was the first time that you'd had this experience. I mean, before then you hadn't had any ET experience, or were there things before?
I had, there were things before, and I think, Lineage is just a wonderful, I wrote the book, but I certainly, it was really a divine collaboration of these beings that really speak to me, especially at night, and to communicate with me, well, 24/7 now, but in those days, there was a lot of communication at night. And so the book is really, it's a kind of a metaphysical action-adventure, and the plot twists are provided by, you know, God, the universe, whatever. So that was just, this book really arose out of my relationship with them. and is sort of a tribute to them, but is also a real connection to them for people who read the book. So that's the part of the book that's just it's a real gift to be connected in that way. And the book is available on Amazon now, and it's also going to be in Barnes & Noble in the New York area, at least in a few weeks. So it's coming out in a bigger way, and I'm very grateful at this point.
Yeah, congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Did the photographic evidence come out before the communication, or was the communication first? Because I'm also interested in that first moment when you, as a photographer, as a real professional, I sort of want to be a fly on the wall with that first moment when you saw the photo and you said to yourself, wait a minute, this is an artifact. This is something else.
Photographing the balls of light at that point, I mean, that there was no doubt in my mind anyway, just from the experience. But to have the documentation, that was really, really great. But the documentation for me started in 95 and 96 when I went to the first healer that I had ever met, and I began photographing her. And this was before there were a lot of orbs around. I didn't even know about the orbs at that point at all. Mm-hmm. And so but as soon as I started, and I started with something called a Holga camera, which is a plastic camera, I was getting some anomalies in the film, and it was impossible to prove that they were anything else other than, you know, some sort of energy coming in. So for me, the proof was immediate. As soon as I made the effort, God gave me a response, and so from 96 on, I really took a lot of pictures of healers, so there was this, you know, background of years and years of photographing anomalies on film that for me were absolutely energy and nothing else. No other explanations.
Yeah.
And then Alan Steinfeld came along at that point and said, well, you know, have you seen the orbs? And I said, well, I'd seen a little bit of the orbs, but I didn't know much about them. And as soon as he said, have you heard of the orbs appeared, you know.
And for anyone who doesn't know, obviously there's these round spherical balls of energy that can be picked up, I believe, by anybody. I mean, I think it's just a given now. If you have a digital camera, you can just call them in, you can just raise your energy, you'll see them.
And while we're on the subject, I think this is worth saying as well, because if you're intending to read lineage, and just if you want to have, the orbs are the first rung on the ladder of energies that humans have been allowed to contact visually, and they are sort of the one-cell units of energy, and the extra-celestials, the ECs, are really more advanced. They are highly sentient beings, and these are beings that you can have relationships with. So the orbs are kind of there to teach us about intention and to kind of wave to us, but the ECs are really here to have relationships with us and be part of our lives.
So how would you say someone would go about something like that? I mean, people have experiences all the time, little tiny things. I mean, I think for the majority of people, they're on the edge. They
right.
see little things occasionally. They hear little things occasionally.
Teetering
in that place of not quite sure, perhaps. I'd like to believe, but I haven't quite been given that one moment.
Mm-hmm. I think the more that you speak to them, in a kind of a reverent way, I think the more that they will come out, and they like to be certain that you really do want them to be there. So I think one thing that you can do is ask for them and ask out loud for them, because they really, there's so many, you know, like 60,000 human thoughts a day at least, so it's best to separate, you know.
We've got them to spare.
Yeah, for sure. And so if you begin to speak out loud, then that, I think, works better. You know, when you're alone, it's just, okay, I know that you're there. And there's so many people, and I certainly get a lot of emails about this, because I do have a couple of videos on my website. And I mean, they are, you know, there are people all over, thousands and thousands of people who have seen these little lights out the corner of their eyes or even in the center of their vision. It's little blue lights, little purple lights, little white or red lights, and that's them. And also, I think it's really time that people understand that every human on the planet is born with one of these as their guidance. And so we're talking about guardians. We're not talking about guardian angels, but we're talking about these are our guardians as well, these extra-celestials. And so there's one assigned to each human. And so they've been with us since the beginning of time. And in fact, they're our parents. They're our celestial light. And so that's why they're here. They're here to be, to light us up, actually, to enlighten us.
Mm. Yeah. It's funny. When you say their parents, I heard someone the other day who said that, you know, as an argument against the conventional theory for evolution, he said, for us to have been created as randomly as, you know, as haphazardly as it was, would have been as difficult for, say, a 747 to have been built by a passing tornado in a junkyard. I really enjoyed that
yeah,
metaphor.
That's great.
That sort of, yeah, it puts it into perspective.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, this is the reason why we're here. And not only did they create, I mean, these are sometimes referred to as the Elohim energies and the creation energies. And so that's, I mean, they are reconnecting with us now because they really do feel that their help is needed. And, of course, they're certainly right. We need all the help that we can get. We are their offspring, and they love us so much. And they really are here for our highest good and for the highest good of our health as well.
Mm. So, I have a question that, I mean, I feel like the first, I don't want to say it's a stumbling block, but the first barrier that I think most people get into is this sort of self-consciousness of speaking out loud, of, you know, I had it when I first started talking to my body, asking my body what it needed, what it was feeling, what it wanted, you know. And I noticed this is just incredible. It's completely illogical because, I mean, you're on your own. No one's around. And you're still, there's this sort of immature self-consciousness about speaking out loud or addressing yourself to a higher force or something else or whatever it may be. I mean, what's your, you know, any comments?
I think that all these things that require a connection to your heart and not connecting to your head. So I think that the more, you know, we're all educated, you know, that expression, we're all educated.
Great way of putting it.
Yeah, and so that's a time, that personal time that you're alone, you know, you're not alone. You know, it's a crowded room wherever we are. And so just to say, I know that you're there. I feel your presence. I may see your presence. I may hear your presence. And I'm paying attention. And because I'm paying attention, I really would love a closer relationship with you. And then you take it from there. And I have to say that lineage is a good way to connect. And there's teachers as well that I also think are true connections. And my teacher that I think is the most amazing, incredible force that's with us on the planet now is Derek O'Neill. And he is an avatar. I truly believe that he holds more Christ energy than anybody on the planet at this moment in time. And he is here to help us. And you can call in Derek. You can call in Derek just like you can call in the ECs, the extra-celestials. And he will come. And whether or not you feel his presence right away, you may and you may not, but he does come when he's called, and he does that for thousands of people at this point in time, and he does come to the U.S. I'm not sure when he's coming again, but you know, he's an amazing force, and I think being in his presence allows people to have the most energy, the most divine energy come into them. And that, I think, is what is needed to really break through our relationship with Source. I mean, that is what brings in, you know, the energy so that we can have this incredible connection to our divine self.
Mm. Yeah, I agree completely. I'd like to visit Derek O'Neill, actually. I know he does some, you told me he does some great workshops in Ireland. And
Yes, he does. There are two a year that he does in Ireland, to, each a week, and they are, you know, life-changing, as is being in his presence even for the day. So when he does come back to New York, it would be a great idea. I would certainly highly recommend it to everybody to drop whatever it is that they're doing, because, you know, he only comes once or twice a year.
Mm. And I've just had, you know, to my own experience at least, that, you know, I completely agree with you that the minute you start to open up the dialogue with, you know, whatever term you want to put on it,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You really do start to get results, and it can be really phenomenal. I mean, it's completely life-changing, really. I mean, and more people are opening up to this, and I really feel, we were talking about this the other day,
mm-hmm.
Once you start to open up this dialogue, and you said to me, you know, there are feelers, there are hearers, sometimes you can hear the voice, sometimes you can just feel the answer, you can be an intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
I felt with myself it was more of an intuitive, I feel, I think,
mm-hmm.
I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into a conversation about free will, about this idea that it's funny how when you really step out of that childhood conditioning, that reactiveness, mm-hmm. to a certain extent, it's almost ironic that at the last stage of really taking your will, you give it up to this higher power because you know that they have your best path in mind. And so my question was, you know, how do you reconcile that idea eventually of if you're following source,
mm-hmm.
even though
I
you've given
say,
your free will.
Right, right. I would just say surrender, because what else can
yeah.
you do? You know, free will is an interesting concept. There's really two choices that humans can make in terms of free will. One is fear, and the other is love. And those are the choices. It's really simple, you know, if you break it down, that's it. That's all we've got.
Yeah, yeah.
And then above that, there's something called divine will. And divine will is the highest, and you can't really, there's no bucking it, you know. You just, there's no way around it. If something is meant to be, it will be. If it's not, it's not. So, you know, ultimately, we really do have to kind of give it up and surrender. Because how do we know? We don't know. This is one of my favorite mantras. God knows. You know? God knows. That's it. And the other one is,
yeah.
So what? Because, you know, what can you do? What can you do?
Yeah, I agree completely. And it's an easier place to be when you just have to ask, you know, left or right, go left. Okay, no problem, because, you know, that's the way. What do you think about the future? You know, there are a lot of things bandied around these days, 2012, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
What's your view? I mean, I know you're a large part of your work is, you know, no matter what happens, don't go into fear, because
mm-hmm.
it's there's a French expression that the fear doesn't erase the danger, so don't bother with it anyway.
I would say that doesn't hold at all, because, you know, we can recreate divine will. Divine will is very fickle. It can change at any point in time. You know, it's called divine intervention, and so we never know until we know. And I think if you think of God as the script writer and humans as the underwriters, you know, we never know. The script is only written a few lines ahead. We don't really know what 2012 is going to be. We have no clue. They don't either, I think, at this point. And so the best thing that we can do is live our lives in truth and in integrity as loving beings. And then let's see what happens. You know, let's see if we can shift the greed on the planet. Let's see if we can be more generous. Let's see if we can complain less and love more. I think this is the core essence of what we need to be. We need to be more conscious. And that's why the ECs are here as teachers for us, because, you know, when we develop relationships with them, they become extraordinary, and they're extraordinary teachers, and they are here to help us, and they can shift all the possible stuff that's lurking or not lurking, that could or could not be, you know? If enough of us ask, and I think this is very important, we need to ask, you know, we need to ask for their help. And they want, you know, they want to be part of our lives. They want to be here. I mean, you know, I have a job that the universe has given me, and my mission is to familiarize humans with interstellar contact, to be sort of the mediary between them and human reaction to them. Now, if that's true, then there has to be a bigger plan. So I don't think that any sort of connection to these beings is going to wait till 2012. It's already happening. Everything is already happening, you know. We're already shifting. And so it's a question of how many people does it take? How much asking does it take for them to be here to intervene? You know, that's I think, the big question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you think people are ready? And when I say people, I mean this idea that, you know, if ETs were globally accepted, you know, religion would be in a state.
I think we have to throw out the ET word, you know, and put it in the past and bury it. That's why they're calling themselves ECs, because when you call them ETs, essentially you're calling them aliens, quote unquote, and they're not alien to us, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to get rid of the old paradigm and throw it out completely, because these beings are a part of God. And they're a very high part of God. You know, they're a part of divine will. So,
right.
You know, I think when...
No cosmic racism.
Pardon me?
No cosmic racism.
Yes,
no
exactly.
No cosmic prejudice.
Yeah. And we have to completely just, you know, undo the past and just look ahead, you know, which is kind of a quirky sort of a pun, because there a lot of these guys are only heads. You know, they say... You have to look ahead to be ahead, you know? They are heads. A lot of them are floating heads. And the flying faces of optimism, we call them around here. So,
But I mean, do you think it's really, do you think people are ready? I mean, do you think things, full disclosure is possible? I mean, for most of us, it's, you know, it's a dream. I mean, you know, how much fun would that be? But every time I look around, you know, most of the time I step out of my house, I think, my God, I mean, is it possible? I mean, you know, War of the Worlds, I don't know how many years ago, and still, I think, would go berserk.
I don't know that they would go berserk. I think that enough people have had enough exposure with them, and I think that we're getting ready, you know, because, I mean, look, in May, and who thought this would be? I mean, in May, the Vatican came out and said, we cannot discount the fact that, quote-unquote, ETs exist, and that they are a part of God. So now we've had acceptance from the Vatican. Thank you very much, Catholic Church. You know, that was May. There have been so many countries at this point, including now Great Britain has released 2/3 of their files. The sightings in Great Britain for UFOs has gone up 40% in the last year. There's a lot of activity in Great Britain. So the point is that I think we are getting really ever closer, you know, we are. And the sightings, and I mean, if you look on YouTube, my God, there's so many incredible instances where there have been UFOs that have been photographed. And they're just, some of them are just amazing.
I think
it's just getting to the point where we can no longer deny that, in fact, you know, there have been some lying that has occurred in all governments, and that these things have been known for many decades, you know?
Mm.
And I think that, that we're about to come out with that. Certainly in Great Britain, they've pretty much said that already. And France has opened their files. Mexico, you know, there's a whole bunch of countries that have done it. And I think with the change in the administration, I think we're going to see some new things. And also, I mean, you know, and I'm not sure what you'd like to talk about where we were the other day, and, you know, not exactly where we were, but what we were doing the other day.
Well, I was going to open it up because that is a major part of this show tonight.
Right.
I mean, would you like to explain the story? I think there's some
sure.
incredible developments took place. I think they began this summer while we were in Wiltshire, when I met
yeah.
you.
Yes, yeah. There was a 3-day period between August 6th and August 8th where every time I took a bath or a shower, and I was in and out of the bathtub a lot in those 3 days, I was manifesting these little tiny gold pellets. And I had seen them before because I had been in June, and one of the friends I brought with me had taken two baths, and she had gotten them in those two baths, these tiny little gold things. And I thought, what a great gift from the universe, from the ECs, because at the point in time when she was manifesting those, we were actually out in the fields and, you know, taking pictures, really wild, amazing pictures and videos, and she was just there sitting in her bathtub, and that's kind of the role that she has played from the very beginning of the story in 2003 when it became very active. She almost never goes out at night. She just stays and takes a bath. So this was, I thought, the universe's way of saying congratulations for being part of this, even though you're not in the field. And so I took another friend and my son back in August when you were there. And all of a sudden, these little gold pellets started showing up, and I thought, wow. And one of my friends who was with me got them one night as well when we were there. But mine continued, and they continued, and they continued. And by the time the 3 days were over, I had quite a stash of them. And then, of course, the dialogue began. You know, what did you think? This was just a gift for you? You know, what did you think? What do you think we're doing, you know? And I'm like, I don't know. What is this? What is this? And I thought, because they're so beautiful and they're so golden, I thought, well, maybe it's a form of gold. And in fact, it is a form of gold, but not the kind that I was thinking of originally. This is a substance that is here to heal most human disease. And I really, truly believe that its medical applications is just, it's not even thinkable what this stuff can do. And what happens is when you put one of these teeny tiny little pellets in water, it kind of comes alive. And then if you take a few drops a day of the water, it seems to have extraordinary health benefits for people. And it's kind of an awakening. It's what they say about it is that it's compassion. It's the light that they left out of humans when they created us. And so this is their way of enlightening us, of allowing us to be more homoluminous, you know, to take in more light, because this is their light coming into us. So I've been giving it away through the Internet, through the evening presentations that I do. This is just this moment in time when scientists are just beginning to study the substance. And so that's where you and I were the other day at a lab where there's a team of scientists that have just taken us on.
Yeah, that have just taken a sample and are doing tests on it as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I have to say, I'm very excited.
Me too.
By the possibilities of it. I have to admit, I mean, I met you, I think, as this process began and, you know, followed as it continued. And, I mean, I was amazed.
Mm-hmm.
Even during little moments during the crop circles, we would meet you in the morning and you would say things like, you know, I found some more pellets and I also got a message. I mean, there was one day, we had an incredible day where in the morning you said, I was told that we are going to meet friends.
Mm-hmm.
And something will take place, and we will bring people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sort of 5 hours later after lunch, we saw each other, we looked at each other in this crop circle, we'd met friends, we'd brought people, and something very special had taken place.
Yeah.
And I was just baffled, you know, and so And I've had you know, moments of communication. So I have no doubt that in my mind about that either. But this is a whole new development. And I mean, where do you think? Do you care to speculate? Even though we have scientists at the moment,
do I care to speculate about what aspect?
I don't know about what the possibilities are. What they may be.
Oh, sure, yeah.
The substances you said were hard metal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm. Where to begin? I believe that they will find DNA that is not of this earth. I think that there are. There's some form of DNA in there. As you're well aware, we did see some sort of life form in the nucleus. There was one pellet that was given to me by them that appeared in my bathroom at a hotel in L.A. And that was the one that they had a few moments to look at the other day. And inside that pellet, which looks kind of like a clear little bead that's about the size
large.
Of a small pea. Yeah.
That one was very large. And just to add, that one appeared in Los Angeles, and the other ones appeared in Wiltshire.
Uh-huh.
And they all, I mean, I can attest that I've seen them. They're all of the same ilk. I mean, they're all of the same style.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they are. They're very round. They're all very round. But the ones that came out of my bathtub and allegedly came out of my feet are a lot smaller than the one that they hand-delivered. Hand-delivered. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
However they delivered that, that one is a lot bigger. I'm glad it didn't come out of my feet. So this is the one that they were looking at. Yeah, it's pretty big. And so to look in inside the nucleus, as we were saying the other day, there is a life form that kind of looks like a cross between a fugu fish and a kitten for me. Don't you think? Didn't you think, Zach?
Yeah, we were calling it the fugu fish.
Yeah.
Which is also another... the geneticists seem to love that, too.
Yeah. Well, isn't God funny? Anyway... there were other pictures, and we don't really have pictures that they saved from the other day, but we will have, I hope, in the next week. In any case, there were some taken at 10,000 times up, which is much less than what we saw the other day. And there, and you can see this on my website, is a photo of an actual photo of the bead, and inside that bead there is a picture of a human face, and an EC face that's sort of in profile, which is an extraordinary thing as well. I mean, you know, that just blew me away. Who would have thought that, you know, there would have been a tiny little face in there? I mean, the whole thing has been just unbelievable, you know, just so remarkable, so miraculous, all of this. And I think that what they will find is something that's going to be very healing for humans. I think that they're going to find that these are light. I think they light up in a certain way. I can see their aura coming out of the bottle when I put them in water. They seem to come alive. I think that there's a lot of illness that this water can heal. And I also think it's just amazing that, I mean, I know you've seen the pictures of the phenomena that's been out my window for the last week, and these are, these circles of light, which I think some people have seen on the internet, they're esoteric things, and they're apparently used to mark the people's homes that are working with these beings, or at least sometimes that's what they do. And so for me, this phenomenon has been out my window years ago, and now recently for the last 6 months. And in the last week, it's completely changed. And there's strands of DNA on the walls at this point from about 8:30 to 9:30 in the morning now. And it's actually coming through my living room window in the morning, and it's never come through the window before. And so it's like it's marking, they're marking this event through my windows. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I have to say, I was just to clarify for people, these are outside one of Nancy's windows. It seems to be light from the sun that's sort of bouncing off something, or bouncing off a wall, but it's hitting, and I've seen pictures that were there before, and it's the week that you took with me these pellets to this laboratory, literally.
And they're
the
pink
light,
and blue. Yeah, and
they're pink and blue.
Exactly like the aura of the
and they're precise double helixes. I mean, they look like double helixes.
Right.
I don't know if you're ever going to put them on your website.
I think I will. I'll put them on Friday.
I mean,
yeah.
those were baffling. I mean, I couldn't believe it because I know you have, in some of your presentations, you also had the same area where the original, I shouldn't say the original, but previous light from the, you know, mm-hmm. the sun just moving across, and there were fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then it changed, and now it's DNA strands.
And the fish were to mark, my son and I are both Pisces, so they kept saying one fish, two fish, blue fish, and then there were, at that point in time, 6 months ago, there were two blue fish outside the window, and now it's DNA hanging
blue
around.
Blue fish, boo-boo fish.
Yeah, that's true, I didn't even think of that, that's interesting. Oh, God.
Huh. Yeah, but you definitely should put that photo up, because I mean, that was extraordinary. My mouth really, really opened and remained open for a long period of time when I saw that photo, especially if we were going to a laboratory to check for, you know, the DNA for this, and 3 days later, I mean, I just couldn't believe it.
I know.
And I certainly know you're not balancing on one leg outside your window with, you know, some lights and some transparent paper. I mean,
No, that's not what's happening. That's definitely not what's happening. Wow.
Yeah, well, it's an extraordinary development. I mean, what do you feel about, how do you, you know...
This is a great unfolding.
This
is the great unfolding, and I think it's upon us now. And that's why all this is happening. So I think this is going to happen sooner than we think, you know? At least that's my hope, that mankind will be given a choice to, you know, to believe or disbelieve soon.
Mm. Yeah. I also wanted to bring up some of your previous work. I think this is an important point. If contact is imminent, some of your previous work was with deformity, very beautiful, sort of stark, striking photos of people with physical facial deformity, you mentioned to me once, I mean, perhaps you'd like to explain it, the fact that you believed that that was a certain preparation for you to see with different eyes, to see beauty with different eyes, with a different perspective, because not everyone looks like us, certainly when we're talking of interstellar contact. I mean, could you say something about that? Because I thought that was really beautiful, and it was really, it was so incredible how it tied in with your early work.
Well, I spent 7 years photographing deformity, and it was such an interesting journey to me. And, of course, these are the people who are the masters, I believe, of self-acceptance. You know, these are the people who are out there looking as they do, and it's a constant challenge. It's a challenge for them. It's a challenge for their families. It's a challenge for the public. It's just loaded in every possible way. And so when I began photographing them, that was also a challenge because, people looking at these images, I mean, they would have all kinds of different reactions. And so seeing the work became about shifting people's vision, and it always takes a couple of seconds to shift your vision. It's the time that the brain takes for the heart to really understand what you're looking at. And so I had been used to that job because I had it for 7 years, and so I think that was in a certain way a preparation. And as they say now, and I think there's a line like this on my website, just because we're not beautiful, just because we don't look like you doesn't mean we're not beautiful. And so, you know, as far as they're concerned, the more images that we see of them, the more likely it is that we can make that leap, because the universe has so many different faces. And there is no such thing as deformity. Everyone is accepted. You know, it is like that bar in Star Wars. So, you know, that sense of what is beautiful and what isn't, it's just all beautiful. And look, here we are, and we're about to elect a president that has never looked
the first
like
baby
the other, you know,
step of the first,
oh my God,
just the right. The first baby of acceptance of difference.
Of difference, yeah.
I mean, it is a real baby step. I mean, it's real kindergarten stuff. But
it is, but you know, for us, I mean, we have to start somewhere, you know? We have to start
absolutely.
Somewhere. This is a huge, huge step. You know, and not and one that not everybody's gonna be happy with. You know, and God bless them.
I do want to say that I really appreciated that the way you, those photos, there are a couple of photos that you do in your presentations of deformed people, and I just want to hold on to that one moment because I thought that was really important for me, at least, when you said it, the heart, you know, it takes a few seconds for the brain, with its conditioning, to see something, to say, that's deformed or that's different, and then to say, ugh, I don't like it. The heart's not doing that.
No,
open
that's
like
ahead.
Oh, that's great, and what I liked about your photos was you really caught, you somehow managed to catch that moment and sort of widen it, sort of lengthen it,
mm-hmm.
because the characters, these people with deformity that you photographed really had like a certain, I don't know how you did it, but they had a certain handsomeness, a certain charm to them, and you found that moment of the brain delayed to the extent that you could see it. You could see what was taking, you could be really say to yourself, wow, I'm seeing with my heart, and it's opening up to them, and oh, there's Johnny Come Lately brain with all his conditioning who's saying, wait a minute, that forehead's a little big, or what's up with that, like,
mm-hmm,
strange
mm-hmm.
hair lip or something. And so
but
I,
you know what? There isn't a human on the planet that we couldn't say that about, you know, because everyone has that, I mean, everyone has God within them. So it's just a question of seeing the God within people. There was a great moment when I spent my first weekend with these kids and their families in Florida, and this was when I first started photographing deformity, and you know, it was really my first exposure, and it was two and a half days, and I remember going back. I remember this so clearly. I remember going back to the airport to go home, and everybody in the airport looked strange to me, you know, because they had normal faces. And I had just spent the weekend with, you know, half the people around had these very different faces. And all of a sudden what was normal was turned upside down. So it is just a question of the eye adjusting as well as the heart adjusting.
Yeah. Well, I think you were given a tremendous training in that. I mean, it really, it's not easy to evolve or change perception, you know, our ingrained perceptions. I mean, they're the classic pictures of the face in the negative space, and then you just don't see it until they change the shading, and suddenly, it suddenly comes to life.
Right.
How do you think we can improve? I mean, I think I asked you this the other day. How do you think we can improve our perception? Or, I mean, people see things all the time. You know, I have seen little things, and I often say to myself, oh, I want to accelerate this process. Mm-hmm. And then, I say to myself, well, don't put your foot too far on the accelerator because then that's putting on the brakes.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go too fast because then you're working against the natural flow.
Yeah, I think when you develop a relationship with these beings, I think that they know when to show you what. You know, I think God, you know, it's that thing where God only gives you what you're ready for or what you think that you can handle. So I think that, you know, that element is at play here. And so, yeah, I mean, for me, there was some moments that I thought, oh, my God, you know, look what I signed up for. And I'm always amazed at what I see. On the other hand, I'm just not frightened anymore because, you know, they're pretty funny. But I also feel like, okay, for you people who had really sort of strict standards for who you were friendly with in high school, it might be a good idea to shift your thinking about that stuff now, you know, because because they're not beautiful in the same way. They almost look like cartoon characters in a sense. To me, anyway. Mm. So what you will see and what you will get, well, you know, who knows? But, I mean, this is, what does God look like, you know? What does God look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. That's a mm-hmm. great question. Well, I mean, he's supposed to be in our image, but who's to say?
Well, I think but God is in everything and everyone, and so that look is always going to be different, you know?
You're right. Whose image is ours?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, who is on first?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that point about perception, what would you say to people who, I'm sure there are people out there who want to see more. Do you think it's a question of, is it analogous to having eyes bigger than your stomach and choosing the three eggs and the bacon and the hash browns and also taking the pancakes? And not being able to finish any of it, and the universe knowing that, so only just giving you an egg. In terms of perception, in terms of opening up to the greater reality, I guess I sort of want to harp on that, because is there a way to build our muscles with that, to accelerate our openness that we're aware of?
Yeah, I think we have to ask, and I think we have to keep asking, and I think we have to ask really honestly from our hearts, you know? And I think they know that when we're in our hearts, and I think they know when we're ready. And I think it's a process. You know, the universe does not give you what you want. They give you what you need to do your mission and to learn your lessons. That's what it is. So you'll get it when you're ready. You know, and maybe you won't get it in the way that you think that you will get it, but you may get it. You know, that it may happen. It's possible. And then, meanwhile, all you can do is really, truly to live in your heart, in your truth, you know, and the integrity and through the sense of who you are within the system, you know, within your God self, and just knowing who you are in truth, you know. And I think the universe really is mindful of who does that and who doesn't, and how well we do it, you know. And I think that we have to understand that we're not alone, that we're always being watched and heard. And so what our actions are and what our words are very carefully listened to, watched, and when we're ready, we're ready, and to try and push it just doesn't work, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I hear that. I hear that 100%.
You know, I mean, I have to remind myself as well, you know, because sometimes I'm in, you know, I'm wanting things that they're not going to tell me, you know? And,
yeah.
I mean, I'd love to know a little more about what's going on at that lab right now, and they're not telling me, you know? But they did finally tell me that Obama was going to be president today. Then that they decided, well, okay, we'll give her that. But she's not really getting what she really wants because, you know, they're just not ready to do it. And so I'll know when I know, you know.
Yeah. I understand. That really resonates with me. I mean, I remember anyway. I mean, this whole thing about being ready, about getting what you want, I find there's probably a grain in me when I ask that question. I know there was certainly a time in my own life when, you know, I wanted, but that wanting was from the wrong place.
Absolutely,
you know, it was from that egotistical
place.
And,
it's
I mean,
an
I think
ego
I wrote
place
an
is what it is.
It's, you know, exactly, exactly.
It's ego, yeah.
And I think I wrote an aphorism afterwards about it. It was something along the lines of sort of once a man has attained the power to use, once a man has the power to use magic, he has lost the... A man only achieves the power to use magic once he has lost the desire to use it. You know, so it's we only get these things once we actually don't even... Once we're above them, which is the irony. Once you don't need it or want it or have any desire to, certainly not to abuse it, then maybe it is opened up to you. But until that moment, it's always going to be a certain I want to do, to enact, to... to manipulate, to use. It will always be a grain of.
You know, it is a game. This is the game of life, and chances are, what you think that you're going to get anyway will be given to you in a different way. You know, I mean, they love the game and they play the game really well. What they're wanting is for us to play the game better and to know when we play the game that it's really incredibly funny. You know, and that I mean, what they say is, humans, please lighten up. You know, and then I wanted to make this other point, because we had spoken a little bit about this before, but you know, that free will stuff, that choice where we can do things with love, you know, I mean, whatever we're doing, if we can do it with passionate, proactive detachment, that's allowed. You know, we're allowed to sort of move ourselves forward. We're allowed to say along the way, well, what do you think about this? You know, I mean, I do that a lot. What's your opinion on this? Is this for the highest good of the mission? Is this, you know, how do you see this? And then I will get answers that are real answers. You know.
Yep. And you can't be in. You're not in that egotistical space when you're asking it. Anyway, out loud, I find that when you're asking out loud, it's that sharing, it's a humble thing, because you ask, you cannot demand, because I mean, even an idiot wouldn't approach it from that angle. But once you're at that place, and I love the fact that you brought up that expression. I love that expression. Could you repeat it again? Passionate, proactive,
detachment.
Detachment.
Yeah,
I love it
for what you're doing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, passionate, proactive detachment. It's like a sort of souped-up, sort of anabolic version of the Zen doing not doing,
right.
which was a balancing act that took me such a long time to get my old silly head around,
right.
Which I finally understood. I mean, I think it's brilliant. I think it's a wonderful way of putting it.
I mean, look, we are not the doer. We are just not the doer, and we have to understand that we're not the doer. And I think the more we understand that, the easier it will be to just say, okay, let's surrender. Let's be on top of it. Let's be passionate about what we're doing. But also, you know, in the end, God decides. So let's just, you know, take it easy and have a laugh, you know? Let's be in joy.
For me too, you know, enlightenment really is just lightening up
right.
on a regular basis.
Right.
I agree. But we have about two more minutes. I want to say your website is nancyburson.com.
Mm-hmm.
You have some fabulous
B-U-R-S-O-N.
Images up. Pardon me?
B-U-R-S-O-N, thank you.
Yes, B-U-R-S-O-N.
B-U-R-S-O-N, yep.
And you have some great images, some from the past, some new. You have, I think, you still have that clip up of one of the pellets, which is currently being analyzed in a laboratory not far from the city.
Mm-hmm.
And any closing words for such a wonderful time you've given us? Any thoughts on the election? I mean, it is an historic day.
It is.
This is
a moment of grace that I think that a lot of Americans have waited for a long time. So
for a long time, oh my gosh,
long time, well, we could one of the expressions that they like a lot is enjoy your day in every way, enjoy your life, forget your strife. That's a good one.
That's nice. Yeah, that's couldn't be better. That's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and they also say, I am we, and we are thee. We are thee, and you are us. You are us.
No wonder
we are
have trouble sleeping with such wonderful messages that come through. I mean, your eyes must be, I mean, you tell me you write everything down in a piece of paper. You've got a little book beside your bed, and they keep you up at night, and you write everything down.
I do.
Well,
sometimes I don't remember what happens, but I do. Yeah.
Well, I would love to continue with you, because I think this is the beginning of an even longer journey. And thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Jack.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. And let's cross our fingers for this evening.
Yes.
Even though we've already been given the call, but
yeah, really.
Fingers.
Please, please, divine will.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. Thank you very much, Nancy.
Thank you, Zach. Yeah. Take care. Lots of love.
A pleasure. Yeah, lots of love to you too.
Thank you.
This is Zachary Fetter, covering for Alan Steinfeld on election night and New Realities. You can get information at newrealities.com. And thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm.